George Clooney's new movie, The Monuments Men, is on in cinemas around the country. It's about a World War II platoon tasked with finding and protecting art stolen by the Nazis. And while Nazis were, of course, notorious for helping themselves to treasures, they weren't the only ones doing a bit of looting. Down through the years, very famous treasures have been swiped or simply gone walkabout, never to be seen again. Joe O'Shea has been looking at it all, and he's going to tell us about it. In fact, I'm sure we could do it into a top 10 or top 5. Let's just take a look at a few. I know you want to start, Joe, with the Irish crown jewels. When were they stolen?
1907, and this is one of the great Victorian...
What are the Irish crown jewels?
Well, they were called the Irish crown jewels, but they weren't really the Irish crown jewels, right? So that's a great place to start with a mystery. What they were the jewels, the insignia of the Order of St. Patrick. So that was like, you know, in England, the British royal family has the Order of the Bath, the Order of the Garter. The Irish version of that was the Order of St. Patrick. It was a chivalric order for very high status Irish aristocrats, basically. A royal order. So they had these royal jewels, which were, you know, worth a lot of money. At the New York Times at the time, the robbery reported that they were worth $250,000, you know.
$250,000 in 1907.
Yes. Now, that might have been fairly wildly exaggerated, because the jewels weren't, they were kind of cut down from, they were taken from other kind of royal jewels and put together and kind of get awarded in 1930s.
But like, did somebody wear them around their neck? Were they on display?
They did. Whenever there was a big royal event or a big ball or, you know, one of these bashes, they'd be taken out of storage and the head of the Order of St. Patrick. The reason why they were nobody even realised they had been stolen, and this is the funny thing about it. Nobody realised they'd been stolen until the king at the time was and the queen were coming to visit Ireland in 1907. So they had to get him out of storage. You know, we better get him out, dust him down, because we're going to need him for the royal reception. They went to the safe where they were kept in Dublin Castle, and they were gone.
Replicas or anything in the place.
And the funny thing was, the guy who was supposed to be looking after him was a guy called Vickers, Arthur Vickers, and he was sort of the keeper of the jewels, basically, in Dublin Castle, the Ulster King of Arms, and he was a bit of an aegis, really. He would get drunk on regular occasions and put on the jewels for a laugh. To show his mates, like, you know, dance around in his front room wearing the jewels. And he was discovered on a couple of occasions actually kind of passed out on a sofa wearing the full regalia. His maid had to tell him a couple of times that not only was the door to the room where the jewels were kept open, the safe was wide open.
Yeah, and so put them back when you're sober.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so the maid told him on a couple of occasions. And one of the interesting...
So therefore, I presume they don't know the actual date of the robbery.
No, they don't. Right. It was a few weeks, you know, they reckon it was a few weeks before Vickers got around to checking on these, you know. It's kind of a silly story, and it gets strange as well, because people might remember Ernest Shackleton, who is the famous polar explorer, yeah. The Tom Crean guy. His brother was a flatmate, basically, of Vickers, and became the main suspect in the robbery.
Shackleton's brother stole the crown jewels.
Yeah, and there were even wilder rumours that Shackleton himself, the famous explorer, could have been involved in some way, because the family were having money troubles. And I'm not so sure how seriously, you know, historians would treat those rumours. But Francis Shackleton, his brother, would have been the main suspect at the time. And Vickers, when he died, he was actually killed by the IRA on suspicion of being an informer in 1921. In his last will and testament, he basically fingered Shackleton.
Hold on, what were we in 1921 from 1907? So there was nothing in 1907, 1908, 1909.
Oh, there was an investigation.
No, but I mean, were these things found?
No, they were never found.
Oh, I see.
These have never been the Irish crown jewels.
So they're out there.
They're out there
the
somewhere.
The truth is out there.
They were digging in the Dublin Mountains in the 1980s, the Gardaí in the 1980s, and they got a tip off from a guy, an old Republican, who said the jewels are buried under the rowan tree on top of it. So people were up there digging in the mountains. There are rumours that they're buried up in the Wicklow Hills. If you're not doing that this afternoon,
listen,
get out the metal detector and get up there.
Because like, if it was $250,000 in 1907, I mean, what's that now?
And this worth a lot of money, and they're probably still out there somewhere. There's rumours that they're buried up in the Dublin Mountains. So,
and has there been any sightings from 21, 31, 41, 51, 61?
There were.
Already?
They got
that's
a ransom.
Not sighting.
The police got a ransom demand in 1930,
really?
Written on very expensive notepaper. You know, kind of, I will send.
Basildon bombed.
Yes, Basildon was suspected at the time, but they couldn't prove anything. But they basically got, send me $1 million. And I'll tell you where the crown jewels are, and but they still haven't been found. So it's one of the great outstanding mysteries.
And they must be worth millions then.
Yeah, but you know, it's they're out there somewhere.
I think I'll buy a shovel today. All right, okay. Well, and the British crown jewels, were they ever stolen except in movies?
They were, and
they
there was an attempt, and he almost got away with this as well. And he was an Irishman, a guy from Meath called Colonel Thomas Blood, one of the crazier, guys up from Irish history, who basically was a maniac. Thomas Blood, Colonel Blood, an absolute out and out maniac. He was a mercenary, he was a soldier, he was a hired assassin. He fought in the Cromwellian Wars on both sides. In fact, I'd say he probably made up a side by himself in the Cromwellian Wars because he seemed to be fighting everybody.
Was he a colonel, really?
No. He was a self-appointed, just called himself, I'm Colonel Thomas Blood. Right. He's from Meath, son of a blacksmith from County Clare, and basically rampaged his way across Ireland, Britain and Europe in the 1760s, 70s.
So a gun for hire.
Exactly, a hired gun.
Yeah.
And also a man of big ambition and big plans, because he decided when he felt he'd been cheated out of some money by the crown in Britain, he decided, right, I'm going to get my own back here, I'm going to rob the British crown jewels.
From where? The Tower of London. So when are we talking here? About 500 years ago?
Yeah, 1671.
Right.
And what he did was, he disguised himself as a priest, hired a prostitute to pretend to be his wife, a parson, I should say, not a Catholic priest, and kind of went into the Tower of London and went up to the guy who looked after the jewels and said, hello, my good man, I am Parson whatever, Blood, and I would like to see the crown jewels, please, here's some money, can you show me?
Hello, my good man, I'm Parson Blood, where's the loo?
So when they got in to see the crown jewels, the woman who he'd hired pretended to faint, staged a fainting fit, and was like, oh, no, and so the keeper of the jewels kind of brought her off to a sofa while Colonel Blood went to work. He cased the joint.
And there on the sofa was your man passed out, completely pissed. The Irish guy with the Irish
jewels. Exactly. He's probably related in some way. So he basically sent, and he came back, he cased the joint, came back, went in again with friends to see the crown jewels, and they basically overpowered the guards. They had crowbars. They prized open the grills where they were protecting the British crown jewels. One guy stuffed the royal orb down his trousers.
Is
that a royal orb down your trousers? Are you pleased to see me? And basically they ran for it with pistols blazing and swords flashing and the beefeaters chasing them through the grounds of the castle. And they almost got away. Two of his guys went down. Blood injured three guys with his pistols.
Really?
There was a horse waiting just outside the gate. Blood was carrying the royal scepter and the crown, leaped to get onto the horse, and some guy rugby tackled him.
And he ruined his future.
Yeah, ruined his future, yeah. And a guy rugby tackled him from behind, got him to the ground. And there was a big dent in the crown. The crown you see today, there was a huge dent in the crown because he dropped it on the way and he grabbed it. And, now Blood would have been very quickly executed for this. I mean, you don't walk in the 1670s, you don't walk into the Tower of England or Tower of London and try and rob the royal jewels. But what he did was, he said, I'll answer to no man unless I'm brought before the king. And he was brought before Charles II, and Charles II was basically so impressed by how lunatic this guy was and how audacious, he actually pardoned him and granted him land in Ireland worth £500 a year in rents.
Really?
So Blood survived and survived his attempt to steal the British crown jewels.
And he was given land in Ireland with £500.
And it's like, you know, the king basically said to him, listen, you're a man after my own
Irish
heart.
And I don't care about Ireland, so here's £500 worth of land, which is now worth a fortune, obviously. Yeah. So he was pardoned. That's pretty good.
Pardoned,
okay. George Clooney, we're talking the Monuments Man here in terms of the thing. He got himself in pretty hot water recently in relation to comments he made about the Elgin Marbles, right?
Yeah.
What was he saying?
Well, this is interesting because, you know, the Monuments Man talks about, what the Nazis did with the artworks of Europe. But it's interesting, you know, when you think about the British Museum in London. Now, when is a heist not a heist? When is looting not looting? I mean, what the British did with an empire over, 300, 400 years?
Is possession 9/10 of the law.
Exactly. I mean, does it make it legal, you know, if you're in control of the country for longer than the Nazis were in control of Europe. The Elgin Marbles being the case in point here. The Elgin Marbles, you know, were on the Parthenon in Greece, in Athens, and the British ambassador to the Ottoman court, the Turks ruled Greece at the time, we're talking about the 1810s here, He basically bought them off the Turks, off the Ottoman ruler at the time. He said, I want them. Can I buy them? The guy said, fine, they will cost you X amount of money. Now, Elgin, Lord Elgin, the guy, he actually bankrupted himself by doing this. So he shipped them back to England. And the British government, actually, at the time, there were a lot of people in England, and this is like 1812, 1813, who said, this is illegal, it shouldn't be done. We shouldn't take these marbles from one of the great architectural treasures, you know, one of the treasures of the ancient world. And the British government did, they had an inquiry about this, and they said, well, you know, Lord Elgin brought them here. We didn't ask him to bring them here, but now they're here. What should we do with them?
And then we are now 200 years later, exactly. Yeah. So we own them. Is that the way they
Well,
say it?
At the time, they bought them from Elgin, yeah, the British government. Right. And now the British government say, we own the Elgin marbles. Mm. And the Greeks, of course, want them back. And George Clooney said this week at a press conference...
Give them back to Greece.
Give them back to Greece at a press conference in Berlin.
Well, you're in your extensive research, Joe, what's your conclusion? Should they go back to Greece? Is George right? 5-1, 5-5.
He's right now because if they had stayed in Greece, they probably would have disintegrated to a point to it. Like the Parthenon actually blew up. You know, the Turks were using it as a gunpowder store in the 1860s, I think. So, but they should go back now. The Greeks have actually built a museum in Athens to house them, which is empty at the moment, and they're waiting for them to bring them back.
Okay, Boris Johnson, it seems, he criticised the actor's comments. He said, look, he was advocating a Hitlerian agenda, and then Clooney fired back saying that the mayor of London must have been tipsy when he criticised.
Yeah, Boris Johnson was not impressed because obviously for London it's a huge prize to have the Elgin marbles over there. And Boris Johnson was strange. It kind of came full circle as Boris Johnson is accusing Clooney of having a Hitlerian agenda when Clooney makes a movie about the Nazis stealing.
They aren't marbles, of course. They are sculptures, right? Sculptures.
They're sculptures, yes.
Yeah, and inscriptions and architectural stuff. And so, okay. All right. So the reaction in England then, anybody say, hang on, you can't do this? I mean, where does George fit in now? Is he fine about it, George Clooney?
Clooney has moved on. But basically, he basically said Boris Johnson must have been drunk when he said what he said about him.
Okay, listen, we're kind of talking heists here. So tell me about the one in Boston on St. Patrick's Day only 20 years ago, or 1990.
This is a great day. If you want to talk about art thievery, this is an amazing example with very strong Irish connections as well. On St. Patrick's Day in 1990, as Boston prepared to paint the town green, two thieves snuck into the Isabella Stewart Gardner Museum, which was a private museum with this huge art collection, which was open to the public. And they took several Rembrandts, Vermeer, Degas, Manet. They took a Monet as well. Take the Monet and run. And they were worth $500 million, right?
Wow.
Now, they walked out, but the strange thing is, they walked past paintings that were worth even more, including a couple of Raphaels and a Botticelli, you know, which is a Dutch master and one of the treasures of the Renaissance. So the police think that they may have been stealing to order, that somebody may have said, an art lover may have said, I want the Monet, I want the Degas, I want the Rembrandt, and that's all I want. And Whitey Bulger, who people might know of, is the Irish, you know, he was recently captured.
And there's going to be a movie coming up soon.
Yes, there's going to be a movie. And there was a movie, The Departed.
Jack Nicholson.
Whitey Bulger is an art lover and was famous.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, well, a real art lover. In fact, when the FBI were looking for Whitey Bulger across Europe and when the Irish police were being asked to keep an eye out for him as well, the police were saying he likes to visit art galleries. So if you see a guy with a strong Boston accent, you know, in an art gallery, that might be Whitey Bulger.
Sure, I'm getting from what you're saying here, because you seem to suggest, you know, like the police think these haven't been found, have they?
They haven't been found,
really?
No.
So we're talking 13 works of art worth $500 million.
$500 million, yeah.
Possibly stolen to order by private collectors or whatever.
By the Irish Mafia.
And the largest private property theft ever.
Yeah.
And we don't know who might have ordered anything or who what.
And possibly the FBI do believe that the Irish Mafia in Boston were involved, because what they say is that nobody pulls off a heist like that in Boston at the time anyway without the say-so of the Irish bosses over there.
Right.
So it could be that Whitey Bulger, could be one of his associates, knows where these art paintings are.
So the Manet, the Rembrandts, the Vermeers, they're all still out there somewhere. Okay, what about any other one? Any diamonds, for God's sake?
Yeah, diamonds, of course. They're a great target for thieves because they're small, they're highly portable, and they're very easily converted back into cash. Also, they can be cut, so you can hide diamonds, if you know what I mean. You can cut them and shape them. And Holland being the world centre and Antwerp being the world centre of diamond production and cutting, so to speak, the processing of diamonds, they've had two of the biggest diamonds heists of all time.
By the way, if anybody out there has any of those Vermeers or Rembrandts, 51552 is our text.
But in 2003, in the diamond district in Antwerp, 100 diamonds worth 100 million.
I remember this. Yeah. That's right. Loads over a period of a couple of days. Yeah. Or something.
And what it was a real, it was almost like they were following an Ocean's 11 kind of like script to do it. There was a lot of disguises involved, a lot of, you know, cars kind of pulling up and guys getting out and jumping, you know, up into the second floor windows and sneaking in and breaking safes.
Well,
and all
well,
that
was
kind of
the
stuff.
Place not closed for the weekend or something? There was something about that. They had got to do it over a period of time.
And they worked their way through kind of security boxes, you know. They very, very methodically went through this whole diamond processing warehouse, right, basically, and managed to get past the very, very sophisticated alarm systems. So the police, the Dutch police, reckoned it was an inside job as well.
Isn't that one you mentioned in Boston earlier on with the Whitey Bulger thing? Mm. If there's any CCTV, is there any pictures of Whitey coming in himself saying, like checking out the 13 that he wants to?
No, they looked back. But as well as that, the fact that they did on St. Patrick's Day, which in Boston is a pretty big deal, as you can imagine, showed a bit of thought put into it, because they knew the police were going to be overwhelmed on St. Patrick's Day. And Boston kind of closes down, you know. It's hard to get around.
And that 100 million quid's worth of the diamonds in the Ocean's 11, as you call it, in Antwerp.
Still out there.
Wait a minute. Everything is still out there.
Everything's still out there. Yeah.
I mean, the only one's caught me, the man in the Tower of London so far.
Thomas Blood, and he got away with it, you know, really. Exactly, you know. Yeah. Schiphol Airport, I mean, if you think 100 million is a lot in diamonds, at Schiphol Airport...
that was more recent.
Yeah, at Schiphol Airport as well. 75 million sterling was taken, which is, you know, up there again is very...
Well, in cash?
In diamonds again.
Oh, in diamonds, right.
And this was at Schiphol Airport. What they did was they robbed a KLM van and used it to get past airport security. And this is in 2007. And they, 2005. And they got inside the cargo terminal and they knew exactly which box to go for. They knew.
They robbed of which van?
A KLM.
So they pretended to be from the KLM airline staff.
And they coolly drove past, straight through about like five levels of security, got in there, and they knew exactly which box they needed to go for.
Insider job.
Yeah, so the police again think must have been an inside job, because they literally walked in, picked the box up off a shelf and walked out.
So were these stones, diamonds?
Yeah, diamonds.
Okay, so like, who was shipping that through a bloody airport with nobody with it anyway, if it was worth 75 million?
A massive...
Does that happen all the time?
I mean, I don't know if you remember...
I have an idea.
I don't know if you remember... do you remember the Henry Hill movie?
Goodfellas.
You know, Henry Hill famously robbed I think that was KLM as well in Idlewild Airport in New York in the 60s, and they knew when there was a shipment of cash going through, and they knew when to go. They literally walked in, picked up the box, and walked out again. And the Henry Hill thing, I think, was something like $10 million.
But no, my point is, you're not going to send 75 million through airports without sending somebody with them. No.
You would assume so, but it happens, you know. I mean, and there's
unless the somebody is the inside man.
Guy.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love all this stuff. It's brilliant. Well, I mean, it's not brilliant. It's terrible. It's disgusting.
It's terrible.
Don't rob this at home, folks. Joe, listen, thanks a million for dropping in. Good man yourself. What was I going to say? Joe O'Shea, it is, talking to us on the programme about heists. I love heists. I love heist movies. Haven't seen The Monuments Men yet. I believe it's not very good.
No, it's not supposed to be very good. I'll wait for it to come out.